biggest thing is playing with confidence. You know, for so long, Hanover's been that team that, you know, before the game even starts, half the teams are probably defeated. So that, taking that approach and knowing that we can and we will, and going back to our team philosophy, is just believing. And I think this group does. I think after the first 2 weeks, they're buying into what we're doing. They believe that what we do is effective, and you know, they watch film and they see what Hanover does, and we feel like we can take advantage of some things. And you know, blessed with an opportunity to get to play a great team, you know, early in the year, I think that's going to benefit both us and Hanover.
Rock Hill's first year head coach Colby Hamill. Rock Hill's tonight has an opportunity, a golden opportunity, against undefeated Hanover, the number one team in the state in eight-man Division II. Hanover comes in with a 40-game winning streak in eight-man play. And with a win tonight in Mankato at Rock Hills, Hanover would tie the record set by Northern Valley when they won 41 in a row back in 1980 is when that streak ended. So great opportunity, fantastic opportunity for Rock Hills. They played really well offensively the first 2 weeks, scoring tons of points and racking up tons of rushing yardage. They really haven't thrown the ball. They'll probably need to throw it a little bit tonight, probably, to win, you would think, against Hanover at least a couple of times, a couple of key pass completions you would think they would need. They're going to have to control the line of scrimmage, and they're going to have to, of course, with any big game, avoid turnovers and mistakes. And their defense is probably going to have to play better. But, you know, here's the thing. You got to figure out how good you are against Hanover. It is not a district game. It is just a regular season game. And whether Rock Hills wins or loses, they will have a better idea of where they stand after tonight. It's a big game, two undefeated teams. Rock Hills is not ranked as of now, but if they beat Hanover, I guarantee you they will be. Mm-hmm. Hanover number one, and they're one win away from tying that record. People I've talked to from Northeast Kansas say Hanover's not as good as they've been the last few years, but they're still good. Which, so maybe they're not great, but they're still good. And from what I heard, no Bruna's on the roster for the first time in years. But they have a fantastic coaching staff. Matt Hoyer, we've gotten to know him over the years, the eight-man All-Star Games. I knew him back before I moved down here. And Hanover is going to be well prepared. I can assure you of that. And Rock Hills will be too. And it's a great opportunity for Rock Hills and for a first-year head coach to have this opportunity, his third game. He might be able to be the mayor of Mankato if they knock off Hanover tonight. And I think a lot of people think this can be a close and tight game. And I think it all depends on how you start. If Rock Hills gets out to a good start and can hang around or get a lead and put a little bit of doubt in the Hanover, especially if they can just run the ball and get a couple big plays in the running game, and all of a sudden Rock Hills kids are like, hey, we did this against Blue Valley, we did this against Lakeside, and we're doing it against Hanover. We can do it against anybody in the state. Your confidence is sky high. But if you get down, you know, 14, 16, nothing early, and then all of a sudden some people will be thinking, oh, here we go. Hanover's not as bad as people said. They're still pretty good. And maybe we're not quite ready for prime time yet. So it could go either way. Mm-hmm. Or it could just be a flat-out, you know, boat race. You know, 50 to 48 is the final, and neither team can stop anybody. That's possible, too. So that's a big game tonight. We'll have updates from that game with score reports from folks up in Mankato. We'll update that throughout the broadcast tonight on Kitty Country 94 and Z96.3 The Lake. So Rock Hills, best of luck to them in playing Hanover coming up tonight. And Dusty, let's go through the rest of the schedule, and we'll highlight our games as well.
Yeah, let's start first with the games, other games that are going on here tonight. Again, another big game in Phillipsburg tonight as well. Number 1 and 1A Smith Center at number 2 and 2A Phillipsburg. And Smith Center's looking for their first win over Phillipsburg since 2011 here tonight. So big one there.
And you asked Coach Sasser this week any extra motivation in trying to knock off Phillipsburg?
I just think each week is its own thing, and this week it's Phillipsburg, and so that's who our focus is on. And like I said, we definitely want to beat them, but we want to play to our level and improve each week. And oftentimes that does lead to a victory, but when it doesn't, you know, you've got to learn from those things. So, yeah, I don't know if there's any extra. The kids might feel that way, but we really just try to treat it like the next opponent.
Love Coach Sass.
Love Coach Sass. Saying everything the right way. At the very last part, he says, try to treat this like another game.
Yeah.
There's the tell sign yeah. right there. This is not just a regular game. This is a rivalry on Highway 36. Phillipsburg has had Smith Center's number since 2011, and not a lot of teams have had Smith Center's number in football for that long. Ever.
No.
Ever.
No.
And Phillipsburg is the biggest rival now. It's not Norton. And it used to be Smith Center-Norton. They were so good so long. Now Phillipsburg's been so good for a while, and there have been some games in this series over the last 8 years where Phillipsburg flat out punked Smith Center and beat them bad.
Mm-hmm.
So this is quite the battle. Phillipsburg lost last week to Plainville, which I think is going to make them even more focused this week. They don't want to lose two in a row. No. Number two team in 2A, defending state champion. Smith Center, defending state champions in 1A. This was the only loss Smith Center had last year, was a Phillipsburg, and it was not
and
a close game.
2 years ago as well, it was their only loss.
Yeah. So this is a chance to, a little bit of payback. Once again, this doesn't affect anything when it comes to districts. It doesn't affect the playoff race at all.
No.
But don't tell these two teams that, because this is a gigantic game up at Phillipsburg tonight. We'll have reports and get texting updates from Smith Center folks, and we'll pass those scores along to you as well on KD Country 94 and Z96.3 The Lake. So we've got a couple really good games up to the north on Highway 36
there. Yes, definitely.
Phillipsburg Smith Center. I wish I could clone myself. I'd like to be there. I like to be Rock Hills Hanover.
Oh, yeah.
I like to be
so
where I'm at.
Places.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I'd like to be all over the place.
Yeah, this is one of those weeks for sure that you wish you could clone yourself or something.
Then we get a week where there's just no good matchups.
Yeah.
And we're like, why can't we spread these out a little bit better?
But I guess if I got to go here, I got to go here. This is
right, yeah. So those are two big games. All right, we'll continue on the schedule.
Yeah, real quick, I'll go through the rest of the area schedule here, and then we'll talk about our games that are on the radio and video stream as well. Non-district games tonight, a big one down in Sylvan Grove. Talk about rivalries.
Lincoln County
another
rivalry.
Another place you might want to be would be the Lincoln.
That'd be another one we could
game.
Be,
yeah.
Yes. We don't have enough stations. We don't have enough people.
No, not at all. So Lincoln at Sylvan Lucas tonight. Be interested to see how Sylvan Lucas bounces back after a tough loss last week to Stockton. Speaking of Stockton, Osborne is going to Stockton tonight. They'll play in a non-district game there. Final tune-up for both of those eight-man, or all three of those eight-man teams from our area that I just mentioned have their final tune-up before their districts will start next week. Now, a lot of district play tonight already here. Actually started last week in eight-man Division II District 4. In those games tonight, Lynn at Lakeside and Pike Valley at Southern Cloud are part of that district, as is St. John's Tipton at Tescott, and that's on Z96 to the Lake and KatieCountry94.com tonight. And I'll have the call down at Tescott in the 8-man Division II District 4 matchup, pregame at 6:30 and kickoff at 7 o'clock here tonight. And then our game of the week on Katie Country 94, Wade's over in Beloit here tonight. Also online video stream of the Beloit Trojan channel at NCKSSports.com. Wade and Todd have it at pregame at 6:30 and kickoff at 7 from Beloit in NCAA League football here this evening. So those are the immediate area games that are going on here tonight. And as always, we'll start with the Football Express presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 5:40, previewing all the area league matchups. And we'll close our game night coverage with the local high school football scoreboard show presented by State Farm Insurance at 10:05.
I want to go back to Stockton for a moment. Really cool thing I saw where the Stockton team, they went over and did some plays or whatever, a little practice session. Folks at the manor there in Stockton for the residents, assisted living, long-term care. That was really a cool picture, really cool thing that Stockton did. I thought that was pretty neat. Osborne at Stockton tonight. Osborne trying to advance to 3-0. Thunder Ridge has a chance to go 3-0. Those two teams have been very impressive, and Rock Hills has a chance to, I think, be in the conversation with those teams with a win tonight over Hanover. The games tonight, let's start on Z96.3 Lake, St. John's Tipton versus Tescott. St. John's Tipton will be a heavy favorite in this one. Last week it was, as they say, a boat race or a high-scoring affair as St. John's Tipton won 66-42, ended the game on a 34-0 run. Dean Gingler, head coach of the St. John's Tipton Blue Jays in his first year as a head man, about staying focused against a team that has been struggling through the first 2 weeks.
Well, one way to do it is to we can look back just at last week and Lynn hadn't had a lot of success in recent times either, and but you let a team hang around that you know you can beat, but if you don't do the things you need to do to make that happen, then they can get on a roll, and that emotion goes a long ways, and that got us with Lynn. I mean, they had some decent players, they just hadn't had a lot of success recently, and once they kind of had that success during the game, it started to roll for them. So we want to make sure we take care of what we can do and try to keep that role from starting on the other side.
Tescott head coach Damon Walker talking about the St. John's defense, a defense that gave up a lot of points, but then towards the end kind of figured things out last week against Lynn.
I've always been impressed with how they've moved defensively and how assignment-oriented they've been in the past, and it looks to me like on film that hasn't changed, that there's been carryover to the fact that, you know, they're detail-oriented. So you're not going to be able to find some soft spot in what they're doing because they have an identity and they choose to do those things well. So that's what stands out to me.
St. John's Tipton at Tescott tonight on Z96.3 Lake. KDCountry94.com. Get the free Z96.3 Lake app on your smartphones and watch it wherever you may. On KDCountry94 and KDCountry94.com, Minneapolis at Beloit. Homecoming for the Trojans this evening. Brad Gober's team, tough loss last week to Southeast Saline. They've tried to flush that out of the system and move on to Minneapolis tonight. The final tune-up before districts next week, which will begin for Beloit on the road at Colby. Minneapolis off to a 2-0 start with wins over Republic County and Sacred Heart. Coach Gober talks about Minneapolis and how they are improved from a year ago.
They're better than they were last year for sure. I mean, you know, they're running a new scheme, just I formation under center, you know, old school offense, you know, that's been around forever. And so the kids are playing hard, and Coach Flax has done a good job instilling belief in their kids, and obviously it's evident, you know, based off of, you know, their production so far. And so, you know, our kids know that, and we've been preaching them that they're a much better football than they were last year, and we had to come out ready to play tonight.
If Beloit can get through this game unscathed injury-wise, and whether they win or lose, if they can get through this thing unscathed, they're going to get a couple kids back that haven't played all year long. In fact, maybe at least two, maybe three, going into next week's game at Colby, which is a huge district game within that district, no doubt. Colby and Beloit, I think a lot of people think those two might be the second-best team in that district behind Scott City. Scott City is not as good as last year offensively, but their defense hasn't given up a touchdown yet, and they've played some good competition. So don't sleep on Scott City. They're still really, really good. Now, can Beloit or Colby knock off Scott City and win that district? Possibly. But if you had to handicap the race right now, Scott City would be one. And then I think two would be, you put Beloit with Colby, and if Concordia can improve, you know, they play bigger level competition.
Mm-hmm.
Concordia might be in the mix for that as well. We don't know. Goodland's off to an 0-2 start. I haven't really seen who they've played. They've struggled the last few years, but maybe they can be a spoiler. Tonight, Tom Flax, his team also, their final tune-up before they start district play next week. Tom Flax coached at Southern Cloud for 6 years, Harrington for 6 years, and now at Minneapolis, and he talks about the Trojans.
You know, up front, I think they're very disciplined. They do a good job of firing off. They stay in blocks well. You know, they've got several guys, different guys skill-wise, skill position-wise, that are, you know, can break a long play at any point in time. And defensively, they just get after you. You know, they don't take any plays off. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a challenge, but you know, looking forward to it.
Minneapolis at Beloit tonight on KDCountry 94, KDCountry94.com. Live video stream at NCCastSports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel. Beloit's won 13 of the last 15 meetings, and they've scored over 50 points in 10 of the last 12. Beloit has pretty much had Minneapolis' number when it comes to their gridiron, but none of that means anything once they kick off tonight. They're at Beloit on homecoming for the Trojans. The live video stream at NCKSports.com and, of course, on KDCountry 94, KDCountry94.com. And once again, in case you missed it, our full schedule, the Express at 5:40, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable, previewing the matchups, talking to some of the coaches before the game. And then 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kickoff, St. John's Tipton at Tescott on Z96.3 Lake. And Beloit hosting Minneapolis on KDCountry 94. And then the local high school scoreboard show at 10:05. You have a score report that we don't have. You always call us at the station, 545-3220. Or if you got our numbers, you can text us as well. And we'll update you on all the final scores. There are a lot of interesting games tonight, as we had said earlier. And we'll give you all those scores tonight at 10:05, brought to you by State Farm Insurance, Kevin Hewitt in Beloit, and Marty Walters in Osborne. And once again, we will give you updates and scores as long as we get them from the Smith Center Phillipsburg game and the Rock Hills Hanover game to pass along to you on both our broadcasts tonight on KDCountry 94 and Z96.3 The Lake. High school weekend schedule, Dusty?
Yeah, high school volleyball coming up here this weekend for a lot of our area teams. Beloit, Smith Center, and Pike Valley are all there competing in volleyball. I don't have that right in front of me. Where are they at again this weekend?
Beloit,
Republic County, yeah, is where that tournament is at for Beloit. And
Smith Center will be there. Thayer Central will be there. Pike Valley, Beloit, yeah. Republic County, of course.
I had all the teams that were there, and then
Concordia, I'm sure, is there.
Had it all in my mind, and then I lost where they were playing at for a second there. So, yeah, that's starting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And then Tescott Invitational for some of our area volleyball teams as well. As Sylvan Lucas, Osborne are both competing there, as is Lincoln. So, yeah, that's Republic County and Tescott are the places to be tomorrow for high school volleyball for teams in our area beginning at 9 a.m.
All right. Best of luck to all the area teams. We'll stick with high school sports for a moment. The Acacia Board of Directors made some decisions the other night, and one of the top ones is the private-public school debate over competitive imbalance. That's been prevalent for decades for the KSHSAA, with a resolution proving to be elusive. So when Paola Principal Jeff Hines and his Frontier League brethren sent forth a proposal to deal with the issue by splitting private schools into a separate division for championship competition, he knew he was likely fighting an uphill battle. And quite honestly, he says in the article that Brent Maycock did a nice job putting together at Topeka Capital Journal, that he knew this wasn't going to pass, and he's not even basically saying this is the way we need to do it. He just wanted to get the conversation started, and he did. He's accomplished that. And there is a lot of talk. The problem, there's no question that there is some momentum for something to be done about that imbalance when it comes to private schools winning so many state championships compared to public schools. There is momentum going in that direction. But as it was stated in the article by Brent Maycock, and what also Mr. Hines says, is we haven't been able to agree on how we're going to go about it. Because there is a multiplier that some states have used to try to make it a little bit fairer between public and private schools. There's a success modifier, and then there's one in completely separate divisions. And Hines said they've taken a vote, and 36% are in favor of a multiplier. 26% want a success modifier, and 25% want separate divisions. Well, if you're all split all these ways, nothing's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to come to an agreement and say, okay, this is the best of both worlds in order for it to happen. And that's the frustrating part for them, is trying to come up with a consensus from across a state that's 400 miles wide and 200 miles north to south. And that's what Hines said. And he's hopeful that Kasha can put together a proposal for the May meeting and they can move on from there. So basically nothing is changing. In the 2018-19 school year, private schools captured 24 of the 102 team state titles, which is 24%. But you take out the 22 titles in 6A, because there's no private schools in that 32-school contingent, the percentage jumps up to 30%. Then there's also the fact that there is recruiting. All the schools can deny it all they want, but there are schools that do recruit. Whether or not the coaches do it or the administrators do it, boosters do. I know from firsthand experience. I've seen it. It happens, and coaches and people can hide behind it and say, well, we didn't do it. Well, yeah, of course you didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But other people did it for you, and you know, and you're happy to take those kids onto your team. So they've changed the transfer rule, because this happens a lot. Well, I'm not happy here. I'm just going to transfer this other school. And you've got to sit out 18 weeks. Now it's a full year.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to slow down that transfer thing. But you can still transfer if there's a hardship or if your family has moved with a job situation, whatever the case may be. So that was something that will be interesting. And sometimes you see kids that transfer from public to private, or sometimes private to public. It can go both ways. The thing that stands out to me is I'm not really, you know, the private-public thing, I get it. I get the competitive imbalance in regards to the championships, the percentages. I understand the transferring issues and recruiting so forth, although there are public schools that recruit too, by the way. So I'm not going to deal much with that, because I think most people are either all for the one side to keep it the way it is, or they're all for a change. What I want to discuss is something that was at the end of the article by Brent Maycock that, to me, I don't understand it. In other board action, the board approved a proposal to allow Class 1A to split back into two divisions for basketball, volleyball, and Scholars Bowl, passing the measure 41-26. Currently, Class 1A has 114 schools, nearly double the size of Classes 3A and 2A, which have 64 schools each, and nearly four times the size of Classes 6A, 5A, and 4A, which have 32 schools. Class 1A was split into two divisions from 2011 to 2018, but they returned to one division when last year's new classification model was passed. The proposal will now be sent out for all Class 1A schools to vote on individually, and if a majority vote in favor of the split, Class 1A will go back to two divisions in the 2020-21 school year, which means that would be next year. Yeah. Not this year, next year, which means we'd only have 2 years of having it back the way it should be, in my opinion, and Dusty agrees with me, I know,
yes,
of keeping it all together in one class and not splitting. This is how people are very creative, and they like to rationalize. When you get numbers involved in anything, statistics or different other things, you go ahead and you can spin the numbers any which way you want to help your argument. Okay, so here's the argument for people that want to split again. Well, poor Class 1A has 114 schools. Class 3A and 2A have 64, and all the others have 32. That's just too many schools for one class. So we need to split it. Okay, so you split it into what? You can't even split evenly 114 into 64. You can't have two 64 school situations. So when you split it into two, now you got 57 in 1A and 1A2, right? So how's that fair to Class 3 and 2A, Dusty? Because they got 64, and these other classes now have 57. That's not fair. Well, where does it end? By the way, if you really want to focus on it, look at enrollment. That's the whole key. Everybody's getting caught up in the, well, there's 114 schools in 1A, and that's nearly double what 2A and 3A have. Look at the enrollment numbers. There is a much bigger difference at the top of 4A to the bottom of 4A, and the top of 3A to the bottom of 3A, and 5A, and so forth, and 6A. There's a bigger difference from the top to bottom enrollment-wise, by far, than from the top of 1A to the bottom 1A in enrollment.
Yeah.
And that's what you really should be going by, is the enrollment situation. But here's the thing. Here's where I ask, where does it stop? 6A, 5A, and 4A have 32 schools. Why doesn't 3A and 2A want to split too? Why don't they split into 32? That's not fair. 6A, 5A, 4A have half the schools. We have twice as many schools to make it to state. That's not fair. I mean, that's what the argument is. We're Class 1A. We have too many schools. This isn't fair. Listen, you want to split? Fine. You water down the state tournaments. It already has been proven. We finally got it right. We went back to the way it was, and we had better state tournaments, did we not?
Yeah.
We didn't have, we went through the brackets. We didn't have losing teams making state. We went through it and compared one day on the show that the records are insurmountably so much better.
Oh, yeah.
When you put all 1A together, you have a better state tournament. And here's the thing. I get the feeling like some schools feel like, well, it's just not fair because we can't make it to state because there are 114 schools. But every single school gets to compete to qualify for state. You're not excluded.
No.
You got to go through, regionals, sub-state, and you make it to state. Okay? And here's the other thing. You have 114 schools. So now you have sub-states where sometimes teams get a bye. I have to win one game to make it to state. That's under the old system in regards to split into divisions. Whereas regionals, you got to win an extra game or two possibly. You know, at sub-state for 2 and 3A, you got to win three games to make it to state. To me, I think you should have to win three games to make it to state. But if you split the divisions, you got situations where schools have to win one, maybe two games to make state. And then you get the watered-down state tournaments. Now you split 1A, so now you have two different destinations, which in the past were what? Dodge City and Hayes. Which I don't know how they're going to do that. Yeah. There's a shortage of officials. We already know this. Now, apparently, Cache is okay with this so because they voted approval of it. The board did. Now it's up to the vote of 1A schools. Listen, I get the schools that have the really low enrollments, and I understand, well, you know, we got 38 kids in our school, and the top 1A school has, you know, 100. Okay, I don't have the enrollments in front of me right now. It'd be helpful if I did. Yeah. It's in my book on my desk if we want to pull them up. Well, okay. How's that any different than the top of 4A versus the bottom of 4A? How's it any different than the top of 3A to the bottom of 3A? How's it any difference from the top of 2A to the bottom of 2A? How's it? You want to really see a big difference in enrollment? Look at 6A and 5A. Should we split 5A into 16 school? I mean, why don't we just put everybody in a state tournament? Guess what? We kind of do already. Because you're all part of the master tournament.
Yeah, it's an extended tournament. We talk about with a lot of other sports. It's like, I got it right in front of me. Wait here. I pulled it up on Keisha, but it's 105 to 14 is what it is, but in 1A. But, yeah, it's just... I don't know exactly where to go with it on that part of it.
So the 105, wait a minute, 114 to what was it?
105 to 14.
So there's a difference from the bottom 1A school of how many students then? That would be 91, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now give me the bottom of 2A to the top of 2A.
2A is 172 to 105. It's less
okay, so
with
that's,
the new.
Yeah. So that's 67 difference?
Yeah.
Okay, how
and
about 3A?
3A is 315 to 174.
So 350, 174? Is that what you said?
315 to 174, yeah.
So that's 150 difference. That's worse than 1A. Okay, 4A.
And then every place. Yeah,
well, I know that.
It'll be higher, so it's 679 to 317 in 4A.
So over 320 difference in 4A.
Yeah, and 13 to 748 in 5A.
So 600 difference in 5A.
And then 2462 to 1320 in
1100 16, yeah. difference in 6A. So we want to split 1A into two divisions because there's this massive difference between the levels because there's 91 difference in students and enrollment, whereas these other classifications, there's 1,100 difference from top to bottom in 6A. Do you really think the school that's at the bottom of 6A enrollment feels it's fair? What about the person that's at the bottom of 5A or the bottom of 4A or the bottom of 3A? Do you think they think it's fair? Of course not. And they might even vote to split that into two divisions. You know, 4A was the two divisions at one point. Remember that?
And you know, I'm looking at regular classifications, which is what it would be for volleyball and basketball. And there's actually, so there's 36 in 6A and 5A and 4A now in the regular classifications. Mm-hmm. The 32 numbers for football.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 64, 64. And then this year it was 117. I'm sure there's a couple schools that maybe have closed or consolidation or whatever there is.
Well, unfortunately, schools are going to, there are going to be more schools that are going to close, and the numbers are going to go down even more.
But the thing that I always,
I guess, what are we, I guess my question is, what are we really trying, what are we, where, who are we really trying to protect here? Are we protecting the schools that have 40 kids or less, and that's what this is all about? I mean, seriously, what are we protecting here? I mean, I know if you have only 15 kids in your school, well, guess what? Whether you split it into two 1A divisions or not, you're going to have a hard time making state no matter how you play this game, right? I mean, seriously, you only have 15 kids in your school, 25 in your school. It doesn't really matter how you want to slice and dice this into one division, two divisions, three divisions, four divisions. You're still got an uphill climb, right?
You do, yeah. Coach Bergman sent me a deal that I kind of agree with, too. Like, when you're talking about as far as the competitive balance and enrollment figures in 6A and 5A, and I talked about this the last time it happened,
You have more kids to pull from.
You've got 12 kids on a basketball team, no matter how many people are in your school.
Right.
And you have to try out at these places. You've got to be at the top of your game to make the varsity
team.
12.
Right.
So, you know, 6A, 5A, 4A, all the way to 317 kids are mostly going to be able to find 12 kids that can play that are varsity quality kids.
Right.
And Coach Bergman's like, it's not always about the enrollment numbers necessarily. It's about, you know, I've got a guy that could probably start for a 3A team, but I've only got, you know, 10, 12 good kids to choose from.
Right.
The whole way through that can even be on my roster. So, you know, some teams only have 9, 10 kids out total, where these other schools you can find, you know, you have 12 kids on a varsity roster no matter what level you're at.
Right.
And so it's a lot easier to fill those 12 spots with 2,462 students at Wichita East than it is with, obviously, 14 at Healy, but Healy doesn't play by themselves. They're co-opted with Western Plains, and that's another part of the thing that we don't factor in when we talk about 114 schools, if that's what it is now, is that it's not 114 teams.
No.
There won't be. There just won't be. It's not possible.
And then you have four teams, five team substates, and then teams get byes, and four team substates where you have to win one game, two games to make state. They're not even full substates. And it is about enrollment because that's how they figure it. Now we can argue all we want. We want about the other things, and Lance is right, but that's not how Keisha does it.
No.
So it all does come down to enrollment because that's how they figure it. So if we don't like to talk about the enrollment figure and say, well, it's not about enrollment, then Keisha's got to change the way they figure it out.
Yeah.
But because it is based on enrollment. It's not based on how many kids go out for basketball at these schools.
Yeah.
It's based on the enrollment.
Yeah.
By the way, new enrollment figures are going to come out today. Supposedly today.
They'll do the head count today.
In regards to the sports and figure out if anybody's going to drop from 3A to 2A and things like that. I just don't know why we couldn't leave it like it. We just switched it. Can't we let it go play out for three or four years?
And when I'm talking about Coach Bergman here, I don't necessarily think he wants a split.
No.
But it is
all based on enrollment.
Yeah.
Because it is. I mean, it's a fact. They show the enrollment figures. That's how they determine whether you're a 1A, a 2A, a 3A, a 4A, 5A, 6A, or if you're going to split into a 1A, Division 1 or 2.
Yeah.
It is on the enrollment numbers. But I totally get what he's saying, and I think we even talked about it before. If you have more kids in your school, you have a better chance of filling out your team to be better than, say, and that's why you have 6A in a separate class. Because 6A versus 1A typically is not going to end very well for 1A schools.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get to where a school has 60 kids versus 30 kids, and one's a 1A Division 1 team and 1A is a Division 2 team, is there really that big a difference? And honestly, it just depends on your school. You might have a class that's really talented, and you got 5 studs, And they're only part of a school that has 30 enrollment, and they're 1A Division 2, and they could beat anybody in 1A Division 1.
Yeah.
Or maybe even compete in 2A. We saw Central Plains girls last year could have beat anybody in 1, 2, 3A, maybe even 1, 4A. They were that good.
Yeah.
It happens from time to time. So then sometimes we put limitations on what we can do. All we know is it's a fact. We've already gone through the charade. When you split 1A into two divisions, you have a watered-down state tournament. It is not. It is cool for the teams that never make it to now make it to a state tournament, but it's not the same thing. Now, if they've never been to a state tournament, they don't know the difference.
Yeah.
I get that. And I hear the argument, well, isn't it, Wade? Why are you against the kids, Wade? And more kids get to state and get to experience being the state. Well, then why don't we just go ahead and have all the games held at Fort Hays State? Why have regionals and sub-state anywhere? Let's just go ahead and have a grand tournament in 1A, and let's just put all 114 schools, or how many teams there are, and let's just go ahead. Let's set it up. Let's have a two-week tournament. We're going to play a lot of basketball, and all the games are at Fort Hays State. Man, if we're so worried about everybody getting a chance to go to state, let's hand out the participation ribbons, hand out the trophies, and let everybody be a participant at state. Wait a minute. You already are. It's just that it's an extended tournament. It's not technically state at regionals or sub-state, but you're still part of the tournament to qualify for state. But if we're so worried about, well, some schools never make it to state, and it'd be really cool for the kids to experience it, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But should you go to state when you're got three wins in volleyball? Like one team did?
Yeah.
That does not happen when you have one classification instead of splitting. That does not happen. In fact, you hardly ever have a losing team, period, that makes it to state when 1A is together. So it makes for a better state tournament. It's a better, bigger sense of accomplishment to make it. I've always said I think the 1A tournament is the toughest when you have all those schools together. I think it is. But I think it means something. But when you split it and you water it down, and then we haven't even talked about this, and we have before on the show. It's one thing to go and you have things split up. The crowds aren't as big. And you've got 30, 40-point blowouts in the first round, or sometimes, as we saw in the semifinals, I mean, semifinals games should not be 30 to 30, 35-point blowouts. No games at state really should be. But there's a better chance for it to happen when you split it into two divisions like that.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. I can't stand the idea. And I hear this, well, there's so many more schools. But if you really look at the enrollment, there's a much bigger discrepancy in enrollment from top to bottom in every other class except 2A. So why doesn't 3A, 4A, and 5A, 6A want to split into more divisions? I mean, where does it end? Where does it stop? If you had let's say it had 128 schools, and you have an even number, at least, then you could have full brackets. But you don't even have that. And as you said, there are going to be more and more schools that are going to co-op or close, unfortunately. That's just a fact. Face it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. You know, the population, enrollments are declining. I mean, there's rumors that Beloit's going to go to 2A in football. Who would have thought that so many years ago? You know, Waukini used to be a solid 3A when I was in high school. They're now 8-man. Well, they're two, aren't they? Eight-man division
no,
two?
No,
they're one. Okay, yeah. So, well, at some point, they're going to be two. I'm going to tell you that right now. So it's whether we like it or not, that's going to happen. And so, listen, I don't hold against anybody if they want to split into two classifications. If that's the way they're going to do it, it actually technically helps the radio station because we have a chance to have more teams make it to state. We have a chance to have more sponsors and advertisers. But you can tell that I'm not doing this for the selfish benefit of the station. Otherwise, I should be arguing for the split, and so should Dusty. But we're not in it for ourselves. I just think, and if you look at other states, and Kansas is behind. The state of Kansas has been behind for a while. We're starting to catch up a little bit. We now finally have football jamborees. Lots of states had those for years.
Oh, yeah.
We finally got that going. They're looking into the public versus private situation, more so under new executive director Bill Faflick. And yet we're still behind in that because a lot of states use some kind of multiplier, modifier, whatever it may be. I mean, the state of Kansas is still behind compared to a lot of states. And where population doesn't even come close to some of these states. And Kansas has already more state classifications than other states right now. And now we want to split it again back into two 1As. And let me tell you, if anybody wants to start going into, let's go back to two 4A divisions, I will lose my mind. We have enough classifications.
That'd be a 3A thing now since there's only 36
and 4A. So you'd be 3A now. So you want to split 3A into two, which who knows? Maybe that's the next thing, which God help us if there is. But I'm not on board with it, man. I'm not on board with it. And the other thing that really upsets me is that if I'm Keisha, I don't even allow this to come up right now.
That's what I don't understand.
I don't know why Keisha's the one doing this.
Just a year after.
Just say we're going to let this play out for 3 or 4 years. Let's play it out for 2 cycles of 2 years. 4 years, see how it plays out. And if everybody really, really thinks it's horrible, then we're open to changing it back to the way we did it, which was splitting into two classifications. And you also know if there's more schools that co-op and close. We'd have a better idea where we stand. I don't understand the big rush to change it back again. I don't.
No.
There apparently must be schools that are clamoring for it, I guess.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, because...
But if that's the case, then why did it get changed the first place back to one?
Well, that's the problem is you had... What you had the last time was not a 1A vote. It was a vote because every single class was getting changed.
Right, so everybody voted.
Like, even if it... Like, if they would have just kept 6A, 5A at 32, then it would have just been a 4A through 1A
vote.
Right. And it might not have passed like it did.
Right.
But since they're changing 36 on the other two classes, that changes their class too. Mm-hmm. So every single school in the state had a vote on it.
Yeah, they didn't vote individual in each class.
Yeah, this was the proposal that was approved by the board of directors to have 36, 36, 64, 64, then the rest in 1A.
Right.
36, 36, 36, the first three. And so it's a proposal that's voted on. Then the schools vote on it because that's how the thing works. But I don't understand how you after a year after that goes into effect, why you're even putting this on the ballot? Why this is even an option, a proposal that's approved to go to approval? Like what?
What do you think the 1A school is going to do? They're going to vote for it.
There's no question. I mean, you know.
So we're going to have a 2-year cycle where we go back the way it should be. Now we're going back.
People are saying, well, the schools still have to vote on it. Well, how'd that go last time? It was overwhelming.
It'll be.
I don't see it changing this time.
No. I just don't know why I couldn't wait at least another 2-year cycle on this. Let it play out for 4 years and see how it goes. And there's no question, you know, because you've been at these 1A state tournaments all these years, and I've been as well, there's a huge difference between splitting it into two and having it as one. It's a major, complete difference. Talk to any official. Talk to a coach. Talk to administrators. You know, even the people that are for this thing, splitting in two classes, they can't deny that the competition's watered down at state. They can't deny the atmosphere isn't as good as when you have all of it at one site. They can't deny it.
No.
They can't. But the comeback is, well, we love our kids, and that gives them a better chance to experience state. Okay, if that's the only thing going by, then let's just go ahead and split everything into 16 school classifications and just automatically skip substates. Let's skip regionals. And let's just go straight to a 16-team state tournament for every classification. Which means we're going to have a lot of classifications.
Yeah.
Let's just go ahead and do it. Why not? Why stop there? Then you got to have a whole bunch more sites to host. Or you're going to have multiple classifications at a certain site. And then you need officials. Which is an issue here, too. And another reason why I don't understand Keisha opening up this box of worms, as I call it. I just don't get it. There must have been some pressure from somewhere saying we need to go back to this. And I just, especially after we just changed it back the way I think it should be, doesn't mean I'm right. It's just my opinion. And somebody says it shouldn't, doesn't mean you're right either. It's just complete opinion. But I know from my experience in 25 years covering high school sports in Kansas, 25 years, I'm old, 25 years, a quarter of a century, I can tell you that it's better, for all the reasons I already established, to not split 1A, and don't get me started. 4A was much worse than splitting 1A. 4A was the worst idea ever. And if anybody's going to sit here and start going, well, let's split 3A, I'm not going to sit here and argue about it because if they can split 1A, why shouldn't 3A say the same thing? Well, we got 64, and these others have 32 or 36. That's not fair. I mean, they have the right to do that too. So does 1A, but I don't agree with it. But if we're going to start down that path, and it's happened before, and I just don't think we need the ball rolling down that path again when we just got it corrected, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we'll see what happens. We don't have control over it anyway, so why worry about it, right? we'll still cover all the teams. We love all the teams. We love all the schools. And like I said, if more teams make it to state, that's great for us. But odds are we're going to have more blowouts at state. And that's just not, I don't know, it's not fun to watch. You know, you've been through it.
17 years for me, and I'll take 1A as a full class over a split every day and twice on Sunday.
Which then makes it the best tournament in the state of Kansas.
Yeah.
1A versus any of the classes, because it is means even more when you can win 1A with that many schools. But, you know, whatever. We'll see what happens. We know everybody knows where we stand. They may agree or disagree with us, and I respect everybody's opinion one way or the other. It is not as simple. I agree with Lance. It's not as simple as enrollment. It's not, but that's how they determine it.
Yeah. because I have ideas that could be fixed that would make the enrollment numbers worse in 6A as far as the discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I understand that whether you've got 2,462 kids in your school or 748, that's still a lot of people to choose from.
It's a big pool to choose from.
That's 12. If you can't find 12 quality varsity kids to go up against any number that's at that school,
right,
then that's just because they're not wanting to play.
Right.
That's on the kids. It's not on the school and the state, I don't think.
I agree. All right, let's move on to college football. KU tomorrow has a chance to continue their momentum after a big win over Boston College. They've got West Virginia tomorrow at 3:30, pregame at 3 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake. Les Miles talks about getting, trying not to get too high after one win.
I've never been around a team that accomplished what they accomplished and didn't have a lot of positive momentum going for the next game. I'd just be surprised as I could be to think that that would be a very, very difficult piece to put in place. You know, I think I'm responsible there to make sure that they know. I think they'll tell me, but I don't think that'll be a problem.
Okay, so Les says it won't be a problem. KU's going to be ready to go against West Virginia. They have a chip on their shoulder because, well, West Virginia is a four-point favorite going to Lawrence tomorrow afternoon. Brian Haney, voice of the Jayhawks, was with us earlier this week, as he is every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. And he says, KU, you know, get a win against West Virginia. The goals are ahead of them. And believe it or not, one of the goals for this team is to go to a bowl game. And five wins could be enough to get there.
Everybody loves you right now. But in the same way that a lot of folks were falling off the bandwagon after the week two defeat,
right,
if you go out and lay an egg here in week four in what should be your heaviest attended game of the season, Boston was fun, but that's not a high water mark. That's a launch pad. That's a corner turn. That's a foundational win that helps you catapult toward bigger things. These guys are all striving for bowl eligibility, and that could come at five wins. That could come at six. They've got the board up on the wall in the main meeting room that has that date already marked on it, the Big 12 championship game and KU football bowl opponent. They have 14 total tiles on this board. They're all about 12 inches by 12 inches, and the first 12 tiles have the logo of the opposition on it, but the last two tiles have a Big 12 logo and then a Jayhawk logo that says KU football bowl opponent. And they look at that every day when they come in to meet. They know they let one slip through their grasp in week two. Just they legitimately feel like they can do this. I think Jeff Long will buy their way into a bowl game at 5-7 if there's enough spots to go around.
Well, I do think that we've had a lot of excitement around the program. You know, we've had over 30,000 in each of our first two home games, and you know, I think this 3:30 start with a conference opponent, you know, I expect to be well over 30,000 again. So that's excitement. We've said a number of times, Wade, that really the success story is going to be our fans. If our fans will come out and support us, you know, early on here where Coach Miles is getting his feet on the ground, getting his recruiting classes put together, they'll be the real heroes in this because Les Miles already has us recruiting at a high, high level. It'll be those fans in the stands showing the passion and the energy and the enthusiasm for where this program is going that will make all the difference come signing day in December. So, you know what? If I could do anything, encourage fans to come from all over the state to come into David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium, be a part of it, and you'll be part of this success.
They do expect a big crowd tomorrow. KU, West Virginia, 3:30 pregame, 3 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. K-State and Oklahoma have the week off. They'll get ready for their Big 12 openers next week. Oklahoma will be hosting Texas Tech, and K-State will be on the road at Oklahoma State. Riley Gates, our Wildcat insider of GoPowerCat, GoPowerCat.com, brought to you each and every week by Hanson Auction Realty and also by Heineken Electric. Well, Riley says the new coaching philosophy is paying off under Coach Klieman.
What good does it do? I mean, yeah, it was annoying that A.J. Parker fumbled the interception when he had, you know, he could have probably gone down and hold on to the ball or he could have gone a different way and not fumbled. It's annoying, but what's the point of, you know, harping on it and throwing him under the bus in a post-game press conference? You know, it's not going to make the play change. It's not going to, if anything, it's going to hurt A.J. because at the end of the day, it's like he's he's already upset because he lost the ball, and now his coach is calling him out in the public eye, and it's just not good. So I think dealing with the mistakes and just kind of moving on from them is really good. You know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't address them and they shouldn't maybe get after people. You know, if they're not punishing or you know, maybe punishing is the wrong word, but doing something in practice this week to fix those muffed punts, for example, then yeah, they're doing something wrong. But I'm certain that they're coaching them up on that. I'm certain that they're encouraging their guys to, you know, continue working on that, whether that's fielding more punts, whether that's working on the jug machine and catching footballs, whatever it is. I'm sure they're encouraging that. I'm sure they're coaching that, because there's no sense in harping on it when that happened on Saturday and it's Tuesday now. So, you know, I think that type, we can point to Skyler all day and say that it's, you know, that's the most relevant example, because he's free, he's playing relaxed and obviously not making a whole lot of mistakes out there. But I think you could look at every player on the field at times and talk about how that type of coaching style has really helped them out this year.
Well, I think the whole team's playing freer, and they're not looking over their shoulder all the time. They're having more fun. It's a difference in philosophy, and Bill Snyder's philosophy worked for a long time, but it maybe was a little bit maybe aged too much, stuck around too long. And Coach Klieman and his staff are doing a wonderful job at Kansas State, and you can't argue with the results thus far. They'll play Oklahoma State next Saturday. What time's that game again? The evening, right?
6 o'clock.
Six o'clock, and you got to get ESPN Plus. You got to pay $4.99, or try the trial period for free for 7 days and then cancel. So many people are going nuts about this. I'm like, that's just the way people are.
And then everybody blew up when they found out four basketball games.
Oh, which I knew. I told people on Twitter and Facebook.
Everything that used to be on ESPN3 or ESPN News will probably now be on ESPN Plus.
It's gonna happen. I mean, KU was already on some of that last year with basketball. Yeah. So it's not like it's something new. It's just that there's more games, and that's where it's going. Streaming's where it's at. And if you don't like it, well, then you're gonna miss out. And you can yell and scream all you want, but it's the wave of the future. It's the way things are going, and it's not like they're asking you to pay, you know, like for a Nebraska pay-per-view game of $39.99 for one game. You can pay $4.99 for a month, and you get all kinds of other stuff, all kinds of other games. You can watch field hockey games, for crying out loud. I've watched weird basketball games between, like, I don't know who it was, CCU versus VKR. I don't know what they're – I'm like, okay, this is like a Division III game or something. I mean, you've got access to more than just that game. Yeah, you're not paying $4.99 just for that game. And even if you were, that's still not that bad.
I've had ESPN Plus pretty much since it came out. I did the trial because they had a – right when it came out, they had a 30 for 30 on Bob Knight that I really wanted to watch. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm going to do this trial and see what happens. And then I was like, oh, it's only $4.99 a month after
you
that.
You kept it.
And then, so, yeah, and I hadn't really gotten on it a whole lot, but – I finally got that Fire Stick and plugged it in last night. And there's like women's volleyball matches from like all kinds of different leagues and stuff like that. And there's
a lot more stuff.
You know, you can watch an MLB game of the day and stuff like that. And
absolutely.
It's, yeah, I mean, don't, I swear it's going, like we said. So
I understand that people complain that they don't got good broadband. They're in a rural area. Yeah. Those are the people I totally listen to. They're screaming and arguing. But all these other people, just save the energy. And if you really care about it, you pay the $4.99. It's not going to break your bank, more than likely. And if it is, then you know what? You got to cut back in other areas, just like anything else. It's called budgeting. We all have to do it. All right, the voice of Oklahoma Sooners was with us on Wednesday, Toby Rowland. And we had a great time having him on the show. And Oklahoma fans, I know, really appreciated that. I found out from some of them. And Jalen Hurts, what about what he's done so far? Toby Rowland says he's exceeded the expectations of OU.
It's been remarkable how Jalen has played through the first three games this year. His stats are better than Kyler's were a year ago, which is hard to fathom. He's completing 80% of his passes. He's got a combined 13 touchdowns and 12 incompletions so far this year. So I thought he'd be good. I thought that, you know, with his experience and, you know, his ability to run, and we didn't know about his ability to throw, that he'd be good and Lincoln would make him better.
And he has. What does Hurts bring to the table that Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, previous Heisman Trophy winners, do not at Oklahoma? Toby Rowland answers that.
I think probably just his power in the running game. I don't know that he's going to win a throwing contest with those guys, but I, you know, Kyler was a Lamborghini when he took off running the football. Jalen is more of a Mack truck. He's willing to run over you. They have used him frequently in short yardage situations. We started to see them implement some plays last week at UCLA that looked a lot like what former Kansan Blake Bell used to run down here, the old Belldozer package, where they just use him to pick up a fourth and short or a third and short in a quarterback run game. You know, he's a big boy now and takes long strides when he gets in the open field. So I think that's probably the difference. I mean, you're splitting hairs to find something anybody does better than Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray did around here. But that is an element to his game that those two guys didn't have that I think you'll see Lincoln continue to lean on.
Toby Rowland, the voice of the Sooners, was with us on Wednesday. Greg Sharp, the voice of the Huskers last week. The week prior, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes. Mark Johnson, if you missed any of those interviews, plus our chats with Riley Gates and the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, or Athletic Director Jeff Long, they're all there for you on our podcast center. Go to the sports ticket page at kdcountry94.com. So Oklahoma, K-State have the week off. Louisiana Monroe's at Iowa State coming up tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. SMU is at number 25, TCU at 2:30. West Virginia at KU at 3:30, 3 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 The Lake. West Virginia leads the all-time series 7-1. Baylor's at Rice on CBS Sports tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, and Oklahoma State at number 12, Texas, ABC primetime tomorrow night at 6:30. The last meeting between these two teams a year ago, Oklahoma State upset Texas 38-35. Top 25 games this week of note. Number 10, Utah is at USC. Air Force number 20, Boise State. That's coming up tonight, Friday night games. Saturday, Alabama hosting Southern Miss. Number 4, LSU is at Vanderbilt. Tennessee is at number 9, Florida. Tennessee 1-2 on the year. Michigan number 11 at number 13, Wisconsin. That's a big game in the Big Ten. Number 23, Cal is at Ole Miss. Ohio State number 6 hosting Miami Redhawks. Auburn number 8 at Texas A&M, ranked 17th. Central Florida ranked 15th at Pittsburgh. Number 22, Washington at BYU. And number 16, Oregon's at Stanford. Old Dominion at number 21, Virginia. Charlotte is at number 1, Clemson. And another huge game, Notre Dame number 7 at Georgia number 3. Colorado trying to bounce back from a loss last week at number 24, Arizona State. And UCLA is at number 19, Washington State. That's a look at the top 25. MIAA football for tomorrow, Washburn at Central Missouri. It is Central Oklahoma at Northwest Missouri State. Emporia State's at Lincoln. Missouri Southern is at Fort Hays State. Oh, darn it, I did it wrong. I hate the schedule on this website. Anyway, let's try it again. Fort Hays State is at Washburn. And the University of Nebraska is at Kearney. Northwest Missouri State's at Missouri Southern. Northeastern State's at Pitt State. University of Central Missouri is at Missouri Western. And Lincoln is at Central Oklahoma, week 3 of the MIAA. We turn our attention to the National Football League, where now that Patrick Mahomes' cutout has been rescued and saved in Lawrence, the Chiefs can look forward to playing Baltimore coming up on Sunday. I think it's a battle between the second and third best teams in the AFC, the Chiefs being number 2, Baltimore being number 3. I put New England number 1 because they've only given up 3 points through 2 games. And by the way, they did beat Pittsburgh with a Hall of Fame quarterback, and Pittsburgh had all their pieces, except for, of course, Le'Veon Bell, who didn't have last year, Antonio Brown, and the Patriots won 33-3, took care of the Dolphins. The Patriots are certainly the team to beat in the National Football League to win the Super Bowl. Everybody knew that before the year began, and even more so now after 2 weeks. So as much as I don't like the Patriots, and I want the Chiefs to win so badly, I'm sorry, you got to use your head instead of your heart sometimes when you're ranking teams. New England has been the best team in the National Football League, and they're defending Super Bowl champions. So the Chiefs can't worry about New England. They got to take care of what they have in front of them. And first step here, their first big test of the year, is at home. Season opener at noon. Pregame 11 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake against the Baltimore Ravens, a team the Chiefs should have lost to last year. The Ravens ran it down their throat. Lamar Jackson didn't throw it a lot. Chiefs running game wasn't great. Patrick Mahomes struggled against the Baltimore Ravens defense. And the Chiefs are down 24-17, fourth down and 9. Mahomes pulls a rabbit out of the hat, made a great play down the field, a 46-yard pickup to Tyreek Hill. Chiefs ended up scoring on a 4th-and-3 from the 9 to Damian Williams. They tied the game, then they got a turnover, and then Butker missed a 43-yard field goal. Then the Chiefs are able to get a field goal in overtime. The defense got a stop, a rare stop last year for the defense. And the Chiefs beat the Ravens in overtime 27-24. The Chiefs have had now 22 games in a row where they've scored 26 or more points. That's an NFL record. I'll tell you, there is a chance that streak ends on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. They've got Earl Thomas now back at safety. He says those long passes and big plays won't happen with him back there. which he may or may not be right. Tyreek Hill hurt Baltimore last year at times. He's not playing in this game. It's something that people, I think, have overlooked a little bit. Mecole Hardman is still a rookie. So, well, we got speed. We just put him in place of Tyreek Hill. In this case, against a veteran defense like the Ravens and an offense that seems to be clicking, and Lamar Jackson is better than he was a year ago when he went to Arrowhead. 7 touchdowns, no interceptions. Although the Ravens haven't really played anybody, the Dolphins are god-awful. They're not even, they shouldn't even be an NFL team right now. They're so bad. And the Cardinals are still trying to figure some things out with a rookie quarterback. And the Ravens barely got by them. So I don't know how good the Ravens are, but I do know the Ravens' defense is good, and Patrick Mahomes talks about the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, they do a lot of different things. They do a lot of different things well. I think that's the biggest thing is they're very sound with what they do. They don't have a lot of breakdowns. They have a really good defense, and they have a great offense and a great special team. So, I mean, it's going to be a great challenge for us. I'm excited for the opportunity to play them at home.
Could be a lot of fireworks. The Chiefs' corners will probably be tested against Lamar Jackson, who likes to stretch the field. He's got former Sooner Marquise Brown, cousin of Antonio Brown. They call him Hollywood, and he's been really good the first couple of weeks. And here's Mahomes about Lamar Jackson's development.
It's going to be a great experience. I mean, we got to play last year once, and then seeing his progression with the understanding of the offense. I mean, I understand going from year one to year two, there's a huge switch that you kind of start understanding the offense at a different level, and it's able to let him have success more as a passer, which, I mean, he's always had the talent, but it's about learning the offense, and he's done that now. And then obviously with his running ability, he can still do that. So it's going to be a great challenge.
John Harbaugh, the head coach of Baltimore Ravens, he has something that Andy Reid doesn't have, Super Bowl ring, and that's what Reid's going for this year. John Harbaugh is a disciple. He is off the Andy Reid tree, and Reid talks about facing Harbaugh and the Ravens on Sunday.
Oh, he's a phenomenal coach. He's a good friend. I mean, I've had that last week too, so I mean, it's the same. But he, I love playing against them because I know they're well coached. And they've got good players. So, I mean, we do this for the challenge of, that experience on Sunday. So, I look forward to always playing those guys. But when you're going, you're kind of into the game and what you got to do adjustment-wise and so on.
This game worries me a lot. The Ravens have the recipe to beat the Chiefs. They did everything right except defend a 4th-and-9 last year. And that was a bit of somewhat of a prayer, kind of. I think the Ravens know the formula to beat the Chiefs, and it doesn't matter where the game's at. And I think that's a team that you don't want to face in the playoffs if the Ravens stay like they are right now. If they can have a little bit more offense, you know, all the talk for the Chiefs is they need a little bit more defense, and they've been in the Super Bowl. If the Ravens had a little bit more offense, they would have been probably going to the Super Bowl because they had the defense.
Oh, yeah.
And that's always been the story with Baltimore. We have a great defense, and the offense is kind of a game manager with Joe Flacco. We'll make a few plays down the field, and we'll win a Super Bowl. If the Ravens got Lamar Jackson, he's better than what Joe Flacco was in his prime, then the Ravens have something. And they might be the team representing AFC in the Super Bowl instead of the Chiefs and Patriots. Chance for Baltimore to make a big statement on Sunday. They feel like they let one slip away last year, which I can't argue with them on that. I think the Chiefs will be better prepared for this game based off of what happened last year. At the same time, no Tyreek Hill. I don't think in the big picture it hurts the Chiefs too badly as long as he's back later in the year in the playoffs. But I do think it can hurt them in this game. I don't think it hurt them against the Raiders, obviously not having him. I don't think DeMarcus Robinson's going to go for 6 catches, 172 yards against the Ravens. Mahomes will probably still get his 300 yards. But, are the Chiefs going to get touchdowns or settle for field goals? Because Baltimore will be happy to stop them on field goals. They'll give them 3 points any day of the week. And what Baltimore's plan is going to be simple. It sounds simple. You keep everything in front of you. You don't give up the big play. You make the Chiefs and the offense go 10 plays, 80 yards, instead of 4 plays, 75 yards, and they score on a 72-yard touchdown pass. We got to keep Mahomes in the pocket. I laugh when people keep telling me over and over nationally, well, the key is to keep Mahomes in the pocket. It don't matter where you have him. He kills you when he rolls out left. He kills you rolling right. He can kill you in the pocket. He can scramble, and his ankle should be a little bit better as well. I really, honestly, my head's telling me the Ravens are going to win this game. My heart tells me the Chiefs are going to find a way. On the flip side, I think the Chiefs' defense is going to be a different look for Lamar Jackson than what he saw last year. Jackson's improved. I think the Chiefs' defense will eventually be improved over last year, and I think they are kind of so far. But the thing that does concern me is the Chiefs, I don't know how they can do against the run. There's question marks against the running game. And then their pass rush hasn't been as good as I thought it would be. It's worse than it was last year, the pass rush so far.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't get pass rush on Lamar Jackson and they don't slow down the run, then the Chiefs are in big trouble. And if that happens, they don't get a great pass rush, get a turnover or two. And if they stop the run, it's a different thing. But if the Chiefs can't make Baltimore one-dimensional in this game, I think it's going to be a long day, and I think the Chiefs are going to have to pull one out of the fire like they did last year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I feel like this is definitely going to be a tough test for their defense right now. For the most part, I think is where it is for me, because we know that the Ravens' defense is good.
Everybody talks about the challenge that the Chiefs' offense is going to have against the defense of the Ravens. I would argue the Chiefs' defense is going to have a big challenge against the running game, and then Lamar Jackson's versatility and mobility.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with that. It's just like, I think everybody's so focused on that Chiefs' offense, Ravens' defense thing that we don't understand how much improvement Lamar Jackson has made at the quarterback position now, after being able to have what the experience that he got last year at the end of the year when he took over for Flacco, and then now that he's in the system and understanding what he needs to do to have success and understanding how to run that offense. And he's playing outstanding this year, leading that group. I know, like I said, it's two games and it's two teams that aren't the best, obviously, but I think that's going to be the bigger question mark going into the game, is how do the Chiefs take care of that defensively? How do they approach that? Because he said get pressure on them, and I think that's how you can slow down a mobile quarterback, is if you can get past that first wave and put pressure on him before he can get out of the pocket. But if you don't, if you try to put pressure on him, but you're not getting there,
don't have containment,
you're in trouble.
Right.
And so that's where it comes for me.
Yep. I think you gotta get a pass rush and keep containment. If you do that, Chiefs have a good chance to win on Sunday. Once again, pregame 11 o'clock, kickoff at noon on Z96.3 Lake. Of course, Tyreek Hill's out, Eric Fisher's out. And Cam Irving at left tackle, something to watch. LeSean McCoy limited practice yesterday. Damian Williams hasn't practiced all week, so the Chiefs might be down one, if not two, running backs, which might be, this might be the Darwin Thompson coming out party. I think he can do good things. And the rest of the Chiefs, they, a few minor injuries, but it looks like they're okay. Baltimore looks to be pretty much healthy, except for their tight end, Mark Andrews, although he limited practice yesterday. So we'll see what happens. Remember Earl Thomas? Chiefs were very close to having him. And he ended up going to the Ravens. So, we'll see what happens coming up on Sunday. Other NFL games. Last night, there was a Thursday night game. You may or may not have seen it, but the Jaguars get their first win.
Shotgun. Minshew looking for it all. Floats it to the left side. It is caught! DJ Chark in the end zone! Touchdown, Jaguars! Minshew puts it exactly where it needed to be. A 24-yard strike. And Jacksonville adds to its lead.
Jags win 20-7 over Tennessee. Both teams now 1-2. Now the owner of the Jaguars has said that he's comfortable making Jalen Ramsey the highest paid corner in the National Football League. If that is true, perhaps Ramsey's going nowhere and everybody's wasted a lot of time talking about a possible trade that's not going to happen. Cincinnati at Buffalo on Sunday. Miami at the Cowboys. Cowboys are a 21-point favorite. Biggest spread in 32 years NFL football. Now watch the Cowboys lose. No, I don't. I was shocked KU scored 48 at Boston College. I think I'm still going to be more shocked by that than if the Dallas loses and at home to Miami, because it is the NFL. They are all supposedly professional players, although the Dolphins starting to wonder. Denver's at Green Bay. Denver could be looking at an 0-3 start. Atlanta's at Indianapolis. Oakland's at Minnesota. The Jets at the New England Patriots get another bye on back-to-back weeks. What is up with that? Jets at the Patriots. Detroit's at Philadelphia. Carolina at Arizona. The Giants at Tampa Bay. Houston at the Chargers. That's an interesting game. Both teams 1-1. Go Texans. New Orleans at Seattle without Drew Brees, and Pittsburgh without Ben Roethlisberger at San Francisco, who is 2-0 on the season. Rams are at Cleveland Sunday Night Football, and a Monday night game, the Bears at the Washington Redskins. All right, we got to finish with the Royals, as the Royals lose last night because of the long ball.
The 1-2 pitch, a swing and a drive, right field and deep. Merrifield back, he'll turn. This is a tie game!
Mike Montgomery goes just five innings. He was pulled from the game because he got ejected. Here's Ned on that.
There were some calls that could have gone either way that he didn't get the benefit of. And, I haven't had a chance to go back and look at the replays on any of the home runs. I mean, this is a club that's been living with the home run all year long. And eight runs came off of home runs tonight. So
Montgomery gets tossed, and the Royals lose 8-5. They were up early 3-0. Twins win it. The Royals now 56-98, and they have a game tonight against the Twins. Eric Skoglund on the mound for the boys in blue, and Minnesota now 94-59 on the season. And then they will play on Saturday, and Glenn Sparkman on the hill for the Royals. And then the fourth game of the series will be on Sunday. It'll be afternoon game. Jorge Lopez has been better as of late. We'll take the hill for the Royals on Sunday afternoon. Anything else to add, Dusty, other than just repeat what we got going on tonight?
Yeah, we have Football Express at 5:40, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable, previewing the area league matchups, then pregame coverage at 6:30, kickoff at 7 on Katy Country 94 and NCKSSports.com online video stream. It's Minneapolis at Beloit. And then on Z96.3, the Lake, KatyCountry94.com, St. John's Tipton at Tescott. And we'll conclude our game night coverage of the local high school football scoreboard show, presented by State Farm Insurance and Beloit at 10:05 on Katy Country 94.
All right, we look forward to it and hope everybody enjoys the coverage and have a fantastic weekend. And we'll talk to you again on Monday.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.